And a couple of other things we've been touching on. I just mentioned before about how a number of commentators, a number of people are worried about what might happen in Europe next year. Will we actually see the end of the grand European project? This idea that if the countries of Europe united, particularly Western Europe, unite, if they come together, if they have a sense of co-governance and they share, then perhaps Europe will never go to war again. We won't see the World War I's and World War II's and of course, the wars of the 19th century and the 18th century and what have you. A united Europe would be a Europe that wouldn't go to war again. That was the idea, that was the hope of the project. And ever since the Second World War with Germany and France initially coming together to form the Eurozone, you've seen more and more countries added on and joined to it. But since the global financial meltdown, things have changed. And we saw starkly how it was difficult for countries tied into a single currency to be able to make some of the decisions and changes they needed for their own economies. Particularly, we saw that in Greece, an inability to devalue. We've also seen it in Spain and other countries. And now this populist wave has swept the world. First, we've seen Brexit. We've seen Britain decide to leave the European Union, leave the single currency. We've also seen the election of Trump and the the idea of protecting your economies, moving away from these large trade deals, which essentially is what Europe is, I suppose. And now there are a number of elections and a number of events that are happening in Europe next year which could actually see the complete breakup of the Eurozone. I'm joined now by Dr. Oliver Hartwich. He's the Executive Director of the New Zealand Initiative. They look at things like this. Oliver, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Yeah, good morning.
So, I mean, am I exaggerating there or, you know, is there really a possibility that we might see one of these events, either, an election in France or the election in Germany or the Netherlands or what have you, some of these things that are happening that could actually see the European Union disintegrate? It's very unpopular. Is it a possibility?
No, you're not exaggerating at all. In fact, you could have been even more alarmist because events are starting earlier than next year. They're starting on Sunday.
Yes, with the Austrian election. Yeah.
There's the Austrian election. Austria is going to the polls again to try to elect a new president. They've tried it before. The first election round was declared void by the Constitutional Court. Then they tried to do it again. Then they had a problem with actually sending out the electoral forms. And now it's their third attempt in this year to actually elect a president. And there's a chance that a right-wing populist, an Austrian version of Donald Trump, if you like, will win this election. And his opponent is a candidate from the Greens Party. So neither of the two mainstream parties that dominated Austrian politics for 50, 60 years is even in the runoff election. Then there is another referendum happening on Sunday in Italy. And in Italy, it is about constitutional reform. And the Italian prime minister has already said that if he loses that referendum, he would resign. Well, that would probably clear the path towards a populist government in Italy, because the Cinque Stelle movement of Beppe Grillo is currently leading in the opinion polls, and they have already made it clear that they would like to take Italy out of the Eurozone. So markets are already starting to panic, and the spreads on Italian government bonds compared to German bonds have increased, so that means that markets are more worried about the state of Italy. So this is just the prelude of more stuff happening next year. We've got the French presidential election, we've got the German election, the Netherlands will go to the polls, and altogether it is a pretty ugly picture for Europe.
Oliver, I have to say, I've always had the view that the single zone euro currency was a bad idea, that it is unworkable, that when you have a whole lot of disparate countries like that, with different types of economies, they're essentially different countries, trying to unite them with a single currency is a bad idea. Is that the view of some other economists, and is that view gaining popularity?
I think your characterization is exactly correct. It was a bad idea to start with. There was no economic necessity to introduce a common currency for Europe. It was a political project driven by political will and political considerations. It had nothing to do with economic reality because, as you say, the countries in Europe are way too different from each other. Their economic cycles are not in sync. And really, structurally, the countries are not comparable, and you can't actually force them into the corset of a common currency. There is a theory in economics, of course, about optimum currency areas. But an optimum currency area is defined by a number of characters. So basically, it means that the countries that you merge should be kind of comparable. And that was never the case in Europe. And therefore, this project was doomed from the start. I remember I studied economics in Germany in the 1990s. Our professors back then already said that this project was unworkable and would fail. Other economists at the time said it as well. Think of Milton Friedman, who said that he wouldn't give the euro more than a decade. Well, he was probably slightly wrong on the timing, but he is definitely right that this project is in bad state and was predictable that it wouldn't really work as a currency for Europe.
Just to make it sort of obvious and clear for us, can you explain why it is that, essentially you've got the United States of America is just that. It is like a united group of countries. Why is it that a single currency there, the US dollar, works where it can't work in Europe?
Well, there are several differences between the US dollar and the euro. The first difference is, for example, that there is not that same degree of labor mobility in Europe that you find in the US. In the US, if you can't find a job in one state, you move to another. If you can't find a job in Finland, you're very unlikely to move to Italy. So it is not the kind of economic area that you would find in the United States. But also, the countries in Europe were very different. I'll just give you one figure. In the 35 years before they introduced the euro, the Greek drachma lost 98% of its value against the Deutsche Mark. So Greece and a number of other countries were used to this process of continuously devaluing their currencies against the Deutsche Mark and against the more harder currencies in Europe. Once you actually merge them together, once you basically put them into a fixed exchange rate mechanism, which is what the euro is, that makes it impossible for them to devalue their currencies, and therefore all the differences in productivity, all the differences in competitiveness over time will actually find a different valve, and that valve is unemployment. So where previously countries could claw back on their competitiveness that they are losing compared to the other European countries, they can't do that any longer, and therefore they are getting into this economic crisis mode that we're seeing now. So this is why the euro currency never worked.
You know, I always wondered, I've lived in the UK for, on and off quite often, actually, Oliver, and I always wondered, why don't they just have free trade and free travel? Why this political union when you're trying to put countries that have cultures that are so completely different to other cultures, why are you trying to harmonise everything? And the problem is that, of course, we have this cynicism around the world, which has been well earned by the global financial meltdown, and these countries are saying, why do we have to be forced together? Why do we have to be like these other countries? And of course, most of the people in the European, the rules that are made are basically made by unelected officials. So, I mean, it's almost an inevitability that this is going to happen, isn't it?
Yeah, again, I completely agree with you. There was no necessity, of course, to make it a political union. And in the beginning, of course, the European project started as the European Economic Community.
Yeah.
With a focus on economic integration. So making that common market work, guaranteeing the free mobility of labor, capital, people, and services, that was a good idea, but that was basically completed in the early 1990s. And after that, of course, Europe tried to become something else. It's now called the European Union, so there's no more a reference to this economic project. It's now seemingly a nation state with the institutions resembling those of a nation state. And that's not going to work. And as you said, it's a very bureaucratic exercise. So the body of EU law runs over more than 180,000 pages. And you currently find more than 10,000 people in Brussels working for the European Commission who are paid more than the British Prime Minister. And that is how the European Union is run. It is a very anti-democratic institution. It's a very anonymous institution. It's a very bureaucratic institution.
Okay, Oliver, peer into the crystal ball for us. One of these things happen, or, particularly, say, Marine Le Pen gets elected as the president of France. She says, we're doing a Brexit, we're doing a Frexit, we're pulling out. Basically, she's all over for the EU if France pulls out. What happens?
Well, that would clearly be the end of the European project if France ever pulled out. I'm not saying that's going to happen next year. I still think if we are seeing a runoff election between Marine Le Pen and François Fillon, Fillon would probably win that.
Yeah.
So that would not be the end of the European Union, but it's unpredictable. I mean, nobody or very few people actually saw the rise of Trump. So there's a possibility. But beyond that, the economic conditions of Europe are going to deteriorate again. Greece will need more money. This Greek debt crisis that we've been talking about so much for the past few years is not over. It's just on hold. So we'll probably see a return of that crisis. We will probably see more crisis in Italy, particularly after Sunday's referendum. It is possible that we're seeing a full-blown banking crisis in Italy. It is possible that we will see the rise of a populist government in Italy. So I think Italy is probably the country to watch at the moment and to worry about the most. But there are other developments, of course. There is the rise of a populist party in Germany. There is Geert Wilders in the Netherlands. So next year, looking into that crystal ball, it is going to be a difficult year for Europe, and that's to say the least.
Oliver, we are living in historic times, aren't we?
Yeah, well, that's probably sometimes more a curse than a blessing.
Yeah, I mean, really, what? I mean, we're really seeing, I guess, the results of the global financial meltdown. We're starting to see the political reaction to that, that, you know, people on the street and what have you, and also this mounting cynicism with the way in which the world has been run.
All of that is right, and I think what we're also seeing is just the construction mistakes that were made in the construction of this European project. They are now becoming visible.
Yeah.
And I have written about this before. I've written an essay last year where I basically predicted all of this, which you can read on our website at the New Zealand Initiative, why Europe failed. And unfortunately, I find myself vindicated now.
Yeah, well, Oliver, the other thing is that, of course, the euro was designed, it was a Canadian economist, wasn't it? And they actually, so this may be a good thing, okay, because they actually designed the euro with the idea of a global currency in mind, didn't they? You don't know about that. So maybe the failure of the euro has saved us from a one world government.
Oh, well, you have to be careful, of course, with Canadian economists, full stop. But I think...
But that is the case, you know. That is the case.
Well, let's put it this way. We can see what happens when the emerging countries that actually have different economies and that are not really completely in sync, and there the lesson is clear. You should never merge them in a currency union. I think this, for example, in our part of the world, should really put the stop signs up whenever there's a discussion about whether we should have a trans-Tasman currency with the Australians.
Ugh.
I think this would be ludicrous, and we can see in Europe what happens when you merge countries. They just need a little bit of a difference in their economic cycles, and you're asking for trouble, and that's why I think it is much better to have countries with their own currencies where they are, where they have the flexibility to do what they need.
I agree. I mean, these people that suggest combining with Australia for a trans-Tasman currency, we might as well say goodbye to making decisions over our own lives.
Well, I would only say one thing about that trans-Tasman currency. If we ever introduce the trans-Tasman currency, we should include PNG into it, because every currency union deserves its Greece.
Oliver Hartwich, the Executive Director of the New Zealand Initiative. Great to talk to you this morning, mate. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's 20 minutes after 11 on Radio Live.